they have a certain workability up to a certain part of consciousness. Beyond that, they become an encumbrance. Like a canoe, when you get to the other side, there's no point in dragging it around with you. You leave the canoe. So thoughts are only necessary so long as you're identifying with the body and you think that you're running the show. And when you let go of running the show and thoughts stop, you then live in silence. In silence, everything happens spontaneously. There's no need to know anything with a small k. It's closest, perhaps, to intuition. In intuition, you just know. If somebody asked you, how did you get to know that, you couldn't tell them, and yet you know it with a great certainty. The same kind of knowing with a capital K occurs as you let go all these encumbrances and limitations. Eventually what happens is the mind stops. Total silence. And you just witness what's happening, sort of curiously. With curious. You wonder what he's up to today. It's amusing to watch what the body and what people think you are as it goes about, you know. From a certain point of view, it's comical. Cosmic joke, you might say. Then you watch whoever, Emery or whatever your name is, you see that you're not that person, and you just watch that body walking around doing everything spontaneously, and it seems to speak, seems to say what it's supposed to say, and it seems to do what it's supposed to do, seems to survive. Whether it survives or not is not all that interesting, frankly. If it fell over, it'd be great. Because, you see, it's not really you, and you begin to see what an encumbrance it is. So having a body is sort of a drag after a while. If you keep it the course of miracles long enough, then you see, you go through a period, I went through a period where it was a drag, and but then you saw without it, nobody here would see you. One day I saw how the body gets disappeared, you see, and I saw the entire mechanism. And now the question came, should I do it? Oh, yes, you can do it easily enough. You see? The body being a belief system and a thought. What happens if you cancel that thought and undo the belief system? That's when you leave. So I saw the way, and then I thought, just spirit, how would I speak? No mouth. I wanted to talk to somebody I love, and they would only see empty space. How could I do that, right? I could communicate with them psychically, telepathically, but they wouldn't even, you know. So that's why a body's necessary then. You couldn't see me, you wouldn't see anybody up here, you see? Nor would you hear anything. All right, that's okay after a certain point. After a certain point, I don't need a body near to you because we are just one. And now what I'm thinking and feeling, what I'm feeling in here, you feel also. See, everything we want to say boils down to a certain feeling. One thing I like about the Course in Miracles is the what for. You know, it says, when chasing goals, ask yourself what for. Fascinating. Whatever you want to do, you ask yourself what for. And you'll find out when you say what for, that you want a certain feeling out of it. I don't care what it is you want in this world, a new Cadillac, you'll find it's to give you a certain feeling. Why do I want a new Cadillac? Well, impress my friends. It'll show them I'm successful. It'll impress the banker that I'm a responsible risk. It'll make my in-laws happy. It'll impress my employees. All right, so these are things you see are going to happen. Well, you ask yourself, what for do you want those things to happen? Oh, well, what you want all those things to happen for is so that you have a certain feeling inside. That's all we ever want anything on this planet for. If you track it down and ask yourself, keep asking what for, you'll come up with a series of answers. When you get an answer, ask yourself, when you get the answer, what for the answer. All right, I want a Cadillac, so I feel important. Why do you want to feel important? What for? Well, I don't want to feel important so that people admire me. All right, what for? You want to be admired. Well, I want to be admired so that I feel secure. Why do you want to feel secure? Well, when I feel secure, I'm happy. Why do you want to feel happy? Why do you want to feel happy? If you want to feel happy, it means you ain't got it, right? to want a thing means that you ain't got it. No matter what you want on the planet, if you keep asking yourself what for, you'll find that ultimately it's to give you a certain feeling within. And that feeling, ultimately, if you keep asking yourself what for in meditation, is a sense of total connectedness and oneness with all things in the universe. We all seek a silent inner bliss, a state of knowingness, a state of awareness of the truth of who we are and who everyone else is. In that state, there is no feeling of separation from anything. All right, so I can do with consciousness then what the Cadillac would have done for me. Can I reach a state of inner happiness directly? It'll take me, let's say, 2 years' work, considering after tax and all that kind of stuff, to save up an extra $20,000 or whatever a Cadillac costs nowadays. I can save myself 2 years of hard work in the world by realizing that all it can give me is something I already have within. I can bypass all of it out there now. I just did a time collapse. I saved myself 2 years of work. Don't need to work 3 years to get a thing that's going to give me an inner state which is already within myself. Therefore, it can do nothing for me. We become totally free of the world when it can no longer do anything for you. There's nothing in the world that can do anything for me. There's absolutely nothing in this world that can do a single thing for me. A Cadillac can no longer affect me either up or down. It doesn't make me happy. It doesn't make me sad. It's okay if it happens, and I don't say you should deny yourself a Cadillac, because if the universe thinks that it's appropriate for your station in life, good for your business and whatever, the universe will get it for you. But you no longer are at the effect of the universe. Ultimately, we become independent of the universe. Nothing that happens in it affects you one way or the other. If it's a beautiful day, it's great, and if it's raining, it's great. Now you're independent of the weather, right? It's raining, fantastic, it's raining. And if it's shining, you say, fantastic, it's shining. Now you're independent of the weather. All the belief systems that go with weather. Think about falling barometric pressure. Every morning I'd get up and I'd feel logy and I'd say, the barometric pressure's got to be down. I was at the effect of this belief system, that the barometric pressure is going to make my inner self happy or unhappy. You know? When you look at all the things you're at the effect of, you wonder how we ever get through from Monday to Friday. You know, all the stuff I eat, this will kill you. This will, you won't get to God. You'll never have spiritual awareness if you eat hamburgers. I mean, you know, everybody's a vegetarian for a certain period of time, you see. There's a certain naive period where you're going to be holy, and holy people don't eat meat, right? And then you see that the body does not affect the self. The self with a capital S is totally independent of the body. And then suddenly, Christ's words, don't worry about what goes in your mouth, worry about what comes out of it, the truth of it hits you. And from that point on, if you wish to be a vegetarian, you can, but you're no longer at the effect of the vegetarian belief system. Up to that time, you're subject to sin and guilt, right? The average vegetarian is into a whole belief system. Now when he eats meat, he expects physical terrible things, spiritual terrible things. There'll be a whole rap about the dying vibrations of the cow and all that stuff. And he's at the effect of all that. God bless him. If he wants to be the effect of all that, I don't.
I started my year over again in about a couple months from the second year. But last week I had an experience like something I wanted and I tried it. And there was that detached feeling when you watched your body do it. And it was really eerie. Did it affect you that way when you first had it? Something I really wanted. And I was like that. Watching my body do it, my body went ahead.
Sure, it does fine on its own, doesn't it?
But it really, it was eerie. I mean, it made me wonder what was happening to my head.
The eerie feeling comes from the remaining ego. The ego that remains, the left brain reasonableness is looking at a spontaneous experience and judging it. See, the left brain is paranoid about the right brain. Very interesting. The left brain is paranoid and suspicious of the right brain. Right.
They just be.
Yeah, you go through those phenomena.
Then, what is the purpose of life as we know it to develop this one?
Apparently, what does the Course say the purpose of it all is, eh?
show that it's an illusion.
Yeah, what for? Why should we realize it's an illusion?
To ultimately come to true perception, or to Christ's vision.
To realize we never were separated. We're all one. Always have been one. In the beginning of it all, to the very end of it all, we're all one. Always have been one. Mm-hmm. You're not separated from God, never have been. God, by, you know, intellectually you can see that quite clearly. Anything that is omnipresent, how would you avoid being part of? By its own definition. That which is everywhere, all the time, forever. You could not be excluded from by definition. But to experience that truth is really the purpose of the Course. It's one thing to see it intellectually, it's another to experience the absolute truth. Yes?
Well, it would be like the Eastern culture and desirelessness, right? So you reach a point where, like in Ecclesiastes, all is vanity. What is the point? What is the point? What is the point? I know to be one with God, but one realizes that. But what is the point? Service?
What is the point? I guess what is the point is to realize what is the point. Depends on where you're at. There ain't no point. The answer we get to all these questions kind of, you know, changes. I think as we do the Course, we go through changes. You know, the Course talks about the borderland. In the borderland, it's like you see the truth, and then the next instant, ego will come up, and you're back in the ego, and then you'll see the truth. And we go through fluctuation. We go through changes, and we see the truth more and more often and greater and greater clarity. But I think the answers to all these questions depend on what chapter we're on, you know, or what year you're in the Course.
You're a doctor, and you went through all the school, and you must have had a goal in mind, and you were very successful at it. It just fascinates me that you were not happy, that you had a strong enough belief in yourself, and you had the strength of character or something to go into this and to go into it so deeply to become so successful, and yet you have reached a point where you don't feel goals are necessary.
I myself don't set goals anymore, no? Because I found they're not necessary, just like I found thinking is not necessary.
If people don't set goals, how can they attain any order or success?
Well, it doesn't make any sense to the ego, no. But, you see, if you constantly surrender your life, if you surrender the next instant, the fun way of doing the third step in AA, or doing that lesson, I place the future in the hands of God, which are both the same lesson. As you place the future in the hands of God, all of a sudden you become aware that you're also placing the past in the hands of God. But as you constantly let go, it is a lesson in faith and trust. You see, if your conscious mind, your ego will tell you, well, if you don't plan for tomorrow, brother, wait till tomorrow gets here, you know? If you ask for a miracle, if you say, I surrender my life and my will to the care of God as I understand them, if you say, I place the future in the hands of God. Now, what is the future? See, when we do these lessons, we get all kinds of associated thoughts. What is the future? When is the future? If I place the future in the hands of God, what is it I'm placing in the hands of God? When I place the future in the hands of God, what is it I'm placing in the hands of God?
Whatever comes next.
In truth, you're placing nothing at all in the hands of God. Future is just a figment of your imagination. There ain't no such animal. There's this instant now, right? Period. When you place the future in the hands of God, what you're talking about is your imagination. You're placing your imagination about what's going to be in the future in the hands of God. In truth, no such thing. But, all right, all you're saying is a certain willingness. See, the Course of Miracles talks about a little willingness for any of these miracles to take place. And, of course, what I told you this morning is just a consequence of thousands of miracles, consequence of literally thousands. When I place the future in the hands of God, I'm surrendering my will in the matter, right? That's the little willingness. It says the Holy Spirit, all the Holy Spirit needs is a little willingness, and instantly the Holy Spirit will take over. So if I say to God, whatever is your will for me, that's what will be happening, then I've let it go. What happens then is everything happens spontaneously. Everything happens spontaneously. Everything just automatically is in place. When I go someplace, there's always a parking space. There's always a parking space right in front of it, where I'm going. People say, you can't park within a mile of that. In New York City, I park right next to the Coliseum, the very front space, closest parking space you can get to the Coliseum, every day for 3 days. Brain, body, mind, spirit festival. And the place is jammed, you know. I parked in the same place every day. I wasn't going to pay a parking lot. You know what I mean? Parked right on the street, right next to the New York Coliseum. I just knew the space would be there. Everything happens of its own. Everything happens spontaneously. Why? Because the universe is perfect. It's perfect. You see, the need of your body to eat something at a certain time will create a certain vibration, let's say, in the universe. And when that time arrives, food will appear from someplace. Friend in will say, hey, I just baked a cake. You want a piece? Kids will bring home a bag of chocolate chip cookies. Your friend will say, I'll meet you at the restaurant. I mean, something just happens, and the food happens, and you don't have to think about it.
You've rather put it quite succinctly to me. I think what you're saying here is, when it says, I need do nothing, does not mean do not act. Because, of course, that's a literal, do nothing is a literal translation, but we must act, because the Course tells us to act. It tells us 365 lessons to do. So I think you have to change that thought from I need to do nothing to not be taking any action at all. We do have to take action. But we choose, and that's our choice, to take that action.
Well, see, the action takes place spontaneously. You need to do nothing about it. The action happens of its own. I'll tell you, the best time to catch the truth of that is a rabbit or something runs across in front of your car when you're driving. And you will notice, after the brake has been put on and all, that what happened was you put the brake on, and then the ego came in and said, I decided to put the brake on. No such thing happened. The brake was on before the little I really realized what was happening. But then instantly the ego jumps in and... In court, you know, they'd say, and then did you decide to put your brake on? Oh, yes, I decided to put the brake on. You experienced that split second. It happened. It happened before you made a decision. You didn't even have time to make a decision. So how did the braking happen before you made your big decision, right? Now, once you see that, that's one of the easiest places to see it. Once you see it in that little instant, you'll see that that is happening all the time. You are always acting spontaneously. And the ego jumps in a split second later and takes credit that I decided to do that. You see, this body here is moving all by itself. I'm not doing anything with it. It just does these things by itself. Do I have to think where to put the hands? It just does whatever it does by itself with no thought on my part. I don't have to be concerned about where the body is in time and space. It just is by itself doing whatever it does. You know what I mean? In other words, see, we have so much more freedom than what we realize. You think, well, unless I, you know, consciously stay in charge of this body, what will happen to it? What will happen to it is it'll prosper and do great. As soon as you get off its back, as soon as you get off your body's back, you'll see it prospers. This body loves to dance. It's a great lover. It eats anything. It never gets tired. I had 3 hours sleep last night. And I feel fantastic. Now, why is that? I don't know. I got off its back is all I can say. I let it just be however the universe is going to make it. And I just kept doing the workbook. Really, that's all I did. I just kept doing the workbook. I'm doing the workbook again for the, I don't know, sixth time or something now. Today I has something to do with the ruler of the mind or something far out like that. Yes. Well, a lot of it has to do, I said, the world, the left brain world is all illusion, and that you see, or that you experience the truth of emotionally rather than intellectually, that all what the world says will make you happy doesn't. Left brain world tells you if you have success, if you have all these things, you're going to be happy, right? Miserable. They're not going to make you happy. I used to live on Millionaire's Row, and they shot themselves regularly. They had divorces regularly. They committed suicide. They killed each other. They had living deaths. They were on drugs and alcohol and all, right? So all what the world said will make you happy didn't. All right. The next thing you'd get into is the right brain world. You say, well, the world of success, materialism. Materialism doesn't make you happy. We'll try a different field. And you get into the right brain world. You get into the occult and the esoteric. And it's very exciting for a while because you've discovered a whole new dimension of life. You've discovered a whole new universe. A universe, multiple universes. And you get fascinated with the right brain world. During that period of time, you may not be too concerned with the material world. Physical wealth and all those things don't mean much to you. And you may just give it all up. I mean, I walked out on the whole establishment just like in an instant. One instant, it came to me to walk out on it all. The whole thing. Multiple board memberships and huge practice in this beautiful estate and all this stuff. Anyway, in one instant meant nothing. It was all left behind. Then you get enamored of the right brain world. All kinds of spiritual belief systems. For a while you think these are the truth. You'll see God if you don't eat meat, right? All kinds of stuff. Give up sex and you realize the ultimate truth. You do all these things. You find out you're not experiencing the ultimate truth. Just your love life is lousy and your nutrition ain't so hot. You're suffering from a protein deficiency. We have a lot of metaphysical mothers, you know. Our kids have actually been taken away by the courts. Yeah, the children suffer from protein deficiency, brain damage, and retardation due to this belief system. The macrobiotics, they died all over the place on macrobiotics. It's probably the worst diet you can be on. Macrobiotics will kill you. Stick to a strict macrobiotics diet. So you chase down these right brain belief systems. Witchery. You get into everything, right? Once you get into it, I used to go through the whole metaphysical library. You found on what level it was so within the illusion. And then one day it dawns on you, just like astrology is also illusion. One day you realize it's also a belief system and a limitation, that you're all of it. None of this applies to you. None of it is so. You're all that there is. There isn't anything else but you. So what you see are people who have given up perhaps the left brain world. They're enamored of the right brain world. And they haven't let that one go yet. And they're chasing down that illusion. You chase down in the left brain world whether success will bring you happiness. As you're thinking there, sitting there thinking about suicide in your Cadillac, dawns on you, this ain't the way. One day you're sitting in your tent eating your brown rice, chanting your chants. Everybody holds hands and gets high. Sizzling lights, fairies, visions, beautiful stuff. One day, realize that's also a vision. That also has not brought you happiness. You haven't got any money, you haven't got anything to eat, bad nutrition, need your bath. Things ain't so good. You realize that isn't the way either. See, the Buddha found that out too, didn't he? Buddha said, he talked about the middle way. Asceticism didn't get him there, nor did hedonism. He talked about the middle path, you know? As much as the Buddha did the original research, he's never been disproven. Fasting, all those things, will serve a purpose for a limited time, but they're all within the illusion. You're not going to realize the ultimate truth in a permanent way by fasting. You'll get an advanced flash of it. You'll get a little closer to what the experience is really like. You can take LSD and get a bit of a glimpse. Get you pretty close. LSD can be pretty close to the ultimate truth. All these things will give you glimpses, but that isn't where you are. That isn't where you are. And to be there, eventually you've got to let go of all the canoes. The Course in Miracles is a canoe. Frankly, I've forgotten the Course in Miracles. I don't remember anything about it, except whatever came through my mouth about the Course this morning. It's a total blank. I don't remember anything about the Course in Miracles. I know nothing about it. There's a lesson there that says, forget this course. This is only a canoe. This is a limitation. You're all of it. What do you need a canoe for when you can fly, right? How can an eagle fly with all you turkeys, right? Even the Course in Miracles tells you eventually that the Course in Miracles itself is a limitation and a limited belief system. All right, so the Course in Miracles is necessary to take us to a certain point. And then it says, at that point, it's like mind stops. Realization happens. At that point, what do you need the course for? What do you need a map for once you get to Detroit? What good is a map once I'm here? Don't need it. So that's really the final answer to your question. First, you let go of the left brain world and all its belief systems. Then you get enamored of the right brain world and all its belief systems. You have to eventually let them all go. And then the ultimate truth hits you in a flash. It happens in one instant. In Zen, they say, one instant you're in hell. Heaven and hell are a tenth of an inch or a hundredth of an inch apart. It's literally so. In one instant, you're an ego, and in another instant, suddenly you're in the absolute truth. It happens in an instant with no warning. And in situations that the spiritual world would have you believe are impossible. You're sitting there eating a steak in a public restaurant, you just got through making love, and instantly the thought of space hits you. Canceled all those belief systems. You see, all these millions and millions of people following all these spiritual belief systems, how come so few become enlightened? It happens so seldom that, you know, whole libraries or books about it when it happens to one individual. Why does it happen so seldom that people are following all these belief systems? Look at them and see that they're nothing but limitations, right? Look at it, you know, how holy looking the person is when he's saying it. Once you've seen the truth, you hear, it's nothing but a limitation. Let go a lot of that stuff, right? Let go a lot of that stuff. Eventually you're going to let it all go. Every belief system. The Course says not one thing this world believes is true. Not one thing. It doesn't say with the exception of libraries and libraries full of supposedly learned books by people who never realize the ultimate truth. Teachers are helpful all along the way. You know, we keep getting higher and higher, but you'll see that a certain system of thought will serve your purpose to a certain point. At that point, it becomes an encumbrance. At that point, you got to let it go. At some point, you see it's not what goes in your body, but what comes out of your mouth that makes the difference. Eh? At one point, you see that. Now, you don't need, but there was a time when you did need the disciplining of vegetarianism. There is a time when you're learning a reverence for life. There is a time when you need self-discipline. There is a time when you need to know how to let go desires. You can go for years and years without eating sugar and sweets or meat or any of those things. And as the years go by, apparently what happens is now because you've learned that lesson, it's no longer necessary. And a new lesson comes in, and the old belief system may no longer be necessary and encumbrance, and you let go. But that's what I've seen has happened, is eventually it's all let go of. All of it. Eventually, we will have no memory of the Course of Miracles. Blank. And that will be the proof of the effectiveness of the Course of Miracles. That will be its own most profound truth. Proof. Mm-hmm. Well, it's time to break, 10 after 12. We're going for lunch now, so. Okay, thank you very much. We'll advance a discussion of the concepts at all before we can really do it justice. So rather than not do it justice, I left it to another time. Well, is there any further questions about what we discussed this morning? Some questions came up at lunchtime, and we had a chance to discuss some of these things with others. Yes. Carry out your desire?
Yes, let me tell you something. I did not know a thing about out-of-body experiences.
But I
received it. And I didn't know what it was. I had to go to a psychologist who could explain it to me, that out-of-body experience. You know what I mean? The person is an out-of-body.
Yes.
But the following day, I wouldn't tell a person at all. But I asked, what did you do?
Yeah. Because, yeah. In one series, I didn't like it at all what the person had in mind. And I woke up. You know, the person is there, and I don't know how to act. And I said, I don't know how to act. You know what to do? Time to go home. That's what you do. You talk common sense. Yeah, go home. Get back in your body and get in bed. Oh, you have to go. Sure.
But what I meant is, do you have power? Like, example, you go out, but do you have power to carry out certain things what you have in mind?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. What happens is that one's desires automatically cause certain things to happen. In other words, like at the Monroe Institute, we had explorer teams. They have explorer teams. Four or five people who are adept at leaving their body at will will get together, decide on a certain universe, a certain question they want answered, and they'll all decide to meet there. On the way, a couple get lost. On the way there, some pretty young thing flies by you, and you forgot what you're out there for. You're having a fine conversation with somebody more interesting, you know. The rest of the team is wondering where you are, you know? Yeah. Whatever you're still holding may interfere.
I was interested in what you said about you feel like you're underrated.
Yes, I know it. That's why I learned the lesson. Consciousness amongst a large segment of people. The Aquarian Conspiracy by Marilyn Ferguson is a really excellent book describing the whole phenomenon and its social repercussions and its effect on relationships and a lot of people that are going through the Course of Miracles. If you read that, I think it's chapter 12 in the Aquarian Conspiracy on transformational relationships. Very helpful to understanding what's going on with you and the people closest to you. If you're going through the Course by yourself and they are not, you're going to have some difficulties. And I think reading that chapter is very helpful, or having members of your family read that chapter. Even though they read it and they seem to understand it, they don't really understand it, but at least it gives them an opening into where the problems lie, and it's up to them whether they want to do anything about it.
there can be severe strains on relationships when one person goes into, you know, advancing their consciousness. I think it's chapter 12 or so in the Aquarian Conspiracy. It's on transformational relationships. I think it's helpful in understanding, you know, if you're doing the Course in Miracles and nobody else is, you may find a strain in relationships. The same with members of AA. You see, they also go through a change of consciousness, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and their goals and orientations towards life now, you know, become somewhat disparate from large segments of society. And I think, you know, that's a very helpful chapter, helping people to realize the kind of strains that may occur. And what you become interested in is not what the world's interested in. And I sometimes have, you know, living in Sedona is a unique experience. And when I go back into the world, I call it back into the world, I have to consciously recall what it is that runs people. I really have forgotten. I really don't understand them when I first go back east, and I can't figure out what they're talking about or why they would want to do such a thing. It seems so grotesque. And then I begin to remember, oh yes, that's what runs people, and now it makes sense. In the group in which I am associated in Sedona, the goals of the left brain world have been left far behind. Nobody even remembers them half the time. You know, you can't remember what it is that runs the world. And it's sort of a shock when you go back and you realize, oh yeah, that runs people. Prestige, status, power, oh yeah, right. Those are important, right. Collecting green marbles or whatever it is the world seems to be doing. But it does seem strange. It's an interesting community in that many people, once they reach a certain stage of consciousness, are attracted to the place. Psychically, they're attracted by the kind of consciousness that is there, the kind of consciousness that is supported. And there, just about every relationship is a transformational relationship with everybody else. In Sedona, there's two groups. There's sort of retired conventional people, and they constitute most of the population. They keep the stores busy and form the basic population there, economic base. And then there's people of all kinds who come in from all over the world that are interested only in consciousness. And they form a very interesting group. They're like a network. Everyone's connected with each other. They're all telepathically talking all the time. And everybody has their own specialty. Some people are, you know, healers, psychic surgeons. Some people are very adept at past lives. My favorite restaurant and my favorite friend and waiter there is very adept at past lives. So while you're sitting there ordering, he's seeing what your relationships were with whoever you're having dinner with through a series of lifetimes and what the karmic lesson is now.